The Inside Aperture podcast introduces you to the experts who use Apple's professional image management application to organize, edit, and output their pictures. Each show features tips and techniques that will help you improve the quality of your photography and bring efficiency to your workflow.
This is Andrew Darlow, editor of ImagingBuffet.com for O'Reilly Digital Media. I have with me today Bill Frakes. Bill is a Sports Illustrated staff photographer based in Florida, and he's worked in more than 100 countries for a wide variety of editorial and advertising clients, including Nike, Coca-Cola, IBM, Nikon, and Reebok. His images have appeared in virtually every major general interest publication in the world, earning Frakes hundreds of national and international awards, including the Newspaper Photographer of the Year Award in the Pictures of the Year competition, a Pulitzer Prize as a member of the Miami Herald staff that covered Hurricane Andrew, and a gold medal by World Press Photo. He has also been honored by the Robert F. Kennedy Journalism Awards and by the Overseas Press Club for Distinguished Foreign Reporting. Thank you, Bill, for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Do you have advice for people, let's say outside of Sports Illustrated, where you're working for them on a very regular basis? Do you have advice for, say, branching out and for getting corporate assignments and for selling stock? Do you have advice for others, and how do you do it?
Well, for most of soliciting that kind of work, I have an agent, Marsha Pinkstaff, who sends my portfolios to people. She does cold calling. She advises me on promotional materials. She has a website. Just all the things that a top rep does, she does for me. And that's where a lot of the advertising work comes from. I think that having your name in as many reputable places as you can is good. I'm on several different websites, principally among them altpic.com, which is a very nice commercial site where people go to find advertising portrait photographers, music photographers. And I use PhotoShelter. They power my website, and I archive using PhotoShelter. And that's a great place to do self-promotion. So the interface and the exchange is so simple, particularly when you're coming from Aperture. There's an Aperture link straight to PhotoShelter, and you can constantly update your website. It makes it just painless and simple. But I send out mailers. I do the website. I talk to guys on the podcasts, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
It's all good.
It's cool. And yeah, on how PhotoShelter sort of interfaces with Aperture, I know you're using Aperture.
All the time.
With regard to PhotoShelter, because that's how I mainly saw your work. I saw it through a website that's powered by PhotoShelter, and I found it very easy to navigate, and I must have looked at 200 or 300 photographs. Can you tell me how an image gets from, let's say, Capture to Aperture to PhotoShelter?
Sure. Well, what I do is I download all the cards into Aperture. We import the data into them that we want. And then I archive all of those images on DVD. Take and immediately export them to DVD. And I'll burn two copies of every single frame I shoot, unless it's just not a frame worth keeping. But I try to keep every frame I shoot. And then I separate those two so they're in different locations in case there's a problem. I do live in Florida, so, you know, you never know. It gets wet there. And then I edit that down to a smaller group, and I put those onto external drives, X-ray to X-serve. And then I take and I edit it down again to a much smaller, tighter group. Those images I work on. Actually, I have an imaging genius, Jeffrey Rittenmeyer, who does a lot of that work for me. And then we'll take those images and migrate them onto PhotoShelter.
And the PhotoShelter interface is something that somehow works together with Aperture? You export
yeah,
somehow?
Yeah, exactly. It depends on what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. The ones that we're working on, that we're taking out and imaging, we'll have worked on those on the desktop, and that small file will be outside of it. So we just use the PhotoShelter uploader tool for that. Mm-hmm. But when I want to protect something, like when I'm on the field and I want to take to be preserved in mass without having done any imaging to it, then I'll just immediately use the PhotoShelter uplink from Aperture and move the whole group. And the great thing about both of these things is that I don't want to be heavily involved in the business of personal digital asset management. It's very important. It's possibly the most often discussed topic anytime you get two photographers together anywhere that I am, certainly. And what PhotoShelter and Aputure both do is they give you, they make your life easier. Right now, my PhotoShelter library is probably 4,000 images, 5,000 images. My Aputure library is somewhere in the neighborhood of 100,000. And it's growing as fast as we can get them keyworded and imported. You know, the digital stuff is easy to keep caught up with. The bottleneck for me is that we've got a tremendous number of, I've been doing this for a while, and the first 85% of my career was all done analog, done on film. And those images, because they were shot on film, are no less valuable to me. So what happens is, but getting them into the system takes a lot longer because we have to scan it. And so we scan it and then import it into Aputure and then keyword it and move it out. And Aputure on a digital, when I'm dealing with digital, saves me hours every day. You know, we use the multiple card importer, and I can walk away from it and just let it run until it's done. I shoot big gig cards, usually 4 or 8s, and I can pop, 32 gigs worth of information into that multiple card reader and walk away and let Aputure ingest it all. When I come back, it's all keyworded and coded and stuff like that.
Wow.
That's a great time-saving thing for me on a daily basis. The film scans is a little bit different,
right.
Because I'm not going to scan 100 images from a football game. Now, I might have just keyworded 100 digital images that I had because they're already in the system, they're ready to go, they don't have to be cleaned up, they don't have to be toned, nothing, they're good to go when they come out of camera. But with the film, I've got to scan it, particularly the 4x5 and 8x10 negatives. That's a labor-intensive process. So then we just use Aputure to keyword and use it as a sorting thing. The other great thing for me about Aputure is that it allows me to structure my current library. I'm migrating my entire library into Aputure. And if you came to my office, you would see I have 50 filing cabinets, 4 drawers each or something. I don't know. I haven't counted them, but a lot, that are full of slide sheets. And inside the slide sheets, each one's numbered, and it's in a folder. And then we built Jason Burfield, one of the coding wizards over at PhotoShelter, used to be my first assistant a decade and a half ago. He probably won't let me mention that because they'll know how old he is. Because he always just tells them that his hair fell out. It was genetic. It's just because he's getting old. But anyway, he's a genius, and he helped me set up a filing system. So I can retrieve anything. I can go in there and type in keywords, and they'll tell me what drawer it's in, what slide page it's in, so on and so forth. Well, I'm now putting that all into Aputure. So I can keep the same structure, because Aputure uses basically the same terminology that we were using. Projects, folders, libraries, it's all there, and it's a seamless transformation for me. So I don't have to rethink the whole process. It's just, instead of having something in a metal filing drawer, now I hit a couple buttons and it pops up on the screen. It's remarkable. I was in Barcelona a month ago, and I was walking down the beach with my wife, and I got a phone call from a client in California that I had sent a dozen images to, and he needed a few more. And I said, okay, I can do that. So I, fortunately, because we were walking back, I had my backpack on. We'd just come back from Perpignan, Visa Port-Lamage, the International Photo Festival. So I had my backpack. I had my MacBook Pro, and we went to an internet cafe right there on the sidewalk. I got online. I accessed Aputure in my home computer, had them send it to PhotoShelter and send him these files. And with AppleScript and some automator scripts, we've got it down so that I can do that remotely. And I sent him 10 images. He had them in about a half an hour.
Wow.
From the beach in Barcelona, from my office in Florida to his in California. That's phenomenal. It, 10 years ago, that would have been a 4-day process.
Absolutely. And what's interesting to me is that your website is powered by PhotoShelter, so my guess is that that's obviously a very strict edit. But then you have all this other work in PhotoShelter. So does it sort of work like a big catalog, which you then pull items into, or do you generally just pull items? You have the huge PhotoShelter catalog, and then you also, when you're ready to make your special galleries for your website, you just make them?
That's right. Well, and I have all kinds of, one of the, probably the biggest use for me outside the website for PhotoShelter is once I've prepared the images in Aperture and get everything ready, I just move that in mass into PhotoShelter. Aperture also knows that you know you can put internet and Aperture that these are also on PhotoShelter, so that when you hit that hard drive, then you know where they are because the integration is seamless. So what I do is, if I'm shooting, let's say that I'm shooting a job for a shoe company, and they want to see 100 selects from their shoot, the people that are visiting my website aren't interested in that. But with PhotoShelter, I can take those images, I can upload it to PhotoShelter, and then I send that link to the client, and they have their own password, and they can come on and they can view it. I can also make it available so that they can do high-res downloads. And that's enormously helpful. Because we can, and you can browse my entire PhotoShelter library by going through PhotoShelter and looking at it. You can browse my entire PhotoShelter library on one of our home computers or office computers using Aperture, and they'll tell you what's on PhotoShelter. I mean, so many different options. Okay. When I'm looking at home, I use Apertures and pop it up on a 30-inch monitor, and PhotoShelter's, the pictures don't go that big, you know. But the fact that you can allow somebody to do a high-res download just by pushing a button, I mean, it's just so great because, you know, when you had to depend on courier services your whole life to get things done, or, I mean, I'm going to date myself, but I remember covering conflict in the Middle East and covering conflict in Central America, where a lot of times to get your film out, which you had to, or natural disasters in those places, you had to go to the airport, find a willing passenger, persuade them to take your film, get on the plane, and at the other end, you'd have somebody waiting for them with a sign. And that's how you had to get this stuff out. There was no other way. You know, because a lot of those places, there was no possibility of transmission. And editing your film was difficult. And if you were shooting transparency, it was a double problem because processing transparency in a remote part of El Salvador was not going to happen. Digital doesn't, it's much easier to work now.
Great. It's great to hear little tidbits from, you know, experiences
from the past.
Like that. Well, so with regard to your camera equipment, is there a particular brand that you rely on?
Well, I shoot Canons.
That's primarily now what you're
shooting? Yeah. I do a lot of 4x5 stuff still, whenever I can. I use a Horseman for that.
And what kind of film or Polaroid or other product do you like to put through that?
Type 55, I like. And I still don't think there's ever been a film that was better than Kodak's Tri-X. It's just a wonderful film. It's got a grain structure and a sharpness that I've always loved. It's tremendous. I don't get to shoot with it enough. I do a lot of things that involve multiple camera remotes, basketball, horse racing, track and field, and it's a whole different way of working. So when you have time to shoot just portraits on the 4x5 and have 6 frames to look at instead of 10,000, it's just an entirely different experience.
Well, when I was on your site, I saw this really amazing photograph of some basketball players going up for a hoop, and that was one of my questions. Essentially, how do you get those shots, both from the camera and also the lighting?
Well, Sports Illustrated and other organizations light the arenas with strobes. We put big, powerful strobes up in the corners, usually 4, sometimes 6, sometimes 8, 2,400-watt-second packs, or just depends on the size of the arena, what lights you want to use. And those are installed. Some of the arenas, most of the NBA arenas, for example, there are permanent installations that you just go in and plug in and you're good. Other arenas, we have to light. And you have to go in the day before and figure out where you need to put the lights. And then we use a system that calibrates lag time and put multiple cameras on the system and fire it so that the cameras essentially all are lagged to one set of strobes. So for that picture, that's what we would call a glass cam. And I've got that particular frame that you're looking at, I believe, was a Hasselblad with a 40-millimeter lens on it that was right behind the glass. It was held in place with magic arms, Bogan's Vantage, or magic arms.
And a 220, so you had at least 20 shots, hopefully?
24. Yeah. Yeah. See, that's another one of the things about digital now. See, now we would put probably put a Mark II back there with an 8K card in it and have 300 shots. You know? And so, yeah, that's changed a lot of the way we work. We actually make more photographs now than we could before because, you know, you couldn't get to that camera until halftime to change the film. you run out there with a 14-foot ladder and climb up, you know, and that was a little bit difficult. But we'll put, a normal basketball game, we might put 6, 8, 10 remotes. And being able to, from the position you're in, being able to, in your mind's eye, see through those cameras and know when you're going to trigger it, because the, you know where each camera is focused, but you're not actually looking through the lens. You're having to see that picture happen from an angle in a different position than the camera's seeing it. And you have to be able to put yourself, transport yourself to be able to see through the viewfinder without physically being able to do it. And that's the trick of camera.
Are there particular tips or any particular tools in aperture, even if it just comes down to the way in which you look at things on your laptop and then how that differs from looking at it at your studio? If you did have to make, let's say, a choice of 3 images out of 2,000 or something like that, mm-hmm. is there some way in which you use aperture that...
I'm pretty old school. Mm-hmm. I just keep eliminating using the starring system. I go through and I put a certain number of stars on the images that I like in aperture. And then I create a smart folder so that those images go to the smart folders. And I then after I get a rough edit, let's say 50 images, I'm using the full the viewer so that I've got everything laid out like it's a context sheet.
Right, and the whole screen is basically...
It's all images.
Filled, okay.
Basically, yeah. And I just go through and I star them in how I want them. And then so I'll go through, just like the same way I would have done with film. I would take a box of film and I would lay out 36 frames in a row in sequence like that. And then I'd go through it and see, because a lot of things I shoot, sequence is important. Plays develop sequentially. And you can, you know, so it makes it easier to know what happened for me when I'm editing, when I'm trying to find the penultimate moment in there. I need to see how it developed. So, and aperture does the same thing. It just lets it go there. And so then I go through, and in the old days I would have picked up, old days, man, really dating myself here. I would have taken the 3 slides, for example, that I liked, and I would put them in a stack on the side, and I would have taken the other 36 or 33 and thrown them away, or had them sleeved, or whatever I decided to do with them. Doing basically the same thing in aperture. You're starring it. The smart folder is basically my stack. And when I get done, you know, after I've looked through every roll of film, which would be every different screen, every time I refresh, you know, and bring more images up on there, then I'm left with, say, if I started with 1,000 images and I have then 50 5-star images, then I can put those on the screen and I can go through and eliminate again.
I see.
And eliminate again. And the beauty with aperture is that since it, often my biggest fear in dealing with any kind of digital imagery is because we're working a lot of 18-hour days, and they're physically demanding days. And I'm doing the editing at the end of the day, unfortunately, instead of the start. And I don't want to make a mistake. And with aperture, since all the files are protected, all the masters are untouched, then it keeps me from screwing up. Because if I eliminate a picture and then want to go back and find it again an hour later and say, ooh, that was a mistake, I should have kept that one, what's there? And it hasn't been messed with. It. And I like the veracity of being able to produce the, you know, with no outside information or any other hands touching the file, just say, look, this is what it is. This is what I saw. Here it was. This is it.
And since the images are sort of on the screen and they're not necessarily huge, are you using the loop?
I use the loop quite a bit. Focus. That's one of my favorite tools. Yeah, I like the loop. The power of aperture, just being able to recall the fact that I can have 100,000, 200,000 images that are important. They're not everyone a portfolio image, but they're important because they're involving something that somebody wants to see at some point, or they can be sold, or they can be displayed. This isn't just my vocation, it's my avocation, it's my life. This is a marathon for me, it's not a sprint. I want to have my life sort of protected, and I want to be able to find it and recall it. And when my good friend Barham Ruby from Apple was showing me aperture the very first time, I realized that, you know, just instantaneously when he put up on the screen, that with some work, I mean, you have to take the time, you have to be diligent about the keywording, you have to do it religiously, like brushing your teeth. You got to do it every day, you know. If you get behind, that's a problem. So,
especially when you're shooting like you are.
Yeah, because I do a tremendous amount of, the volume is high. So it was rapture, actually, because I realized that I would be able to find this work. And I'm showing pictures today that have been sort of lost to me for 10 or 12 years, you know, 15 years, just because, you know, when you shoot 315 days a year and you're at a lot of top events and a lot of prominent events, then, you know, people want to see the most current stuff, and that's what you're looking at. And some of that older stuff kind of gets lost. Well, now it's not lost to me anymore because I can find it very quickly. I don't have to go to a file cabinet somewhere. I've got referenced files, and I can travel with a tremendous amount of information on my desktop and show people 3,000 images and just have tiny little thumbnails, but look great on the screen. You can tell what it is, and Aperture knows exactly where they are in my X-ray deck server, and they can pull them up for me, and off we go.
I'd love to know, sitting at your desk, at your home or studio, what does it look like when you have Aperture open? What is there in front of you?
Well, you can go to Apple's website right now. Yeah, it's there. They have about five great pictures of it up there. So I have twin 30 monitors, and I have twin 30s on my desk, and my assistant has twin 23s on hers, and we're using Mac Towers, and it's always new and different and changing images up there.
And do you like? Could you just explain to me like how you really like to look at your images in that configuration if you were going to be
really
going
big?
So does that mean like
one side is
like a full screen and one side is...
Yeah, one side is the... Well, you can run Aperture 16 different ways, but... Or I shouldn't have said that because I don't know how many different ways you can run it. You can run it a lot of different ways. And how I do it is I'll put the context sheet on one screen and then the full frame image there and look at it. And I just click through it in one by one and look at it big.
So what are one or two non-digital items that you always have in your camera bag and that you might suggest other photographers?
Gaffer tape.
Okay.
And batteries.
Batteries both for incidentals plus your camera?
Extras. Well, I was talking about like double A's or something.
Right.
And I don't go anywhere without my iPod.
Me too. And what about a digital item? You know, apart from your camera, is there any particular digital item that's always in your camera bag?
I almost always have radio remotes so that I can, you know, use a camera. Use strobes off camera, or I can rig a camera to work in a remote location because you never know where I might want to put a camera where I can't stand, but it'd be a nice angle or clever. So I always have radios, radio remotes.
That's a great tip. Wizards, yeah. Because a lot of people, you know, they assume you do an off-camera flash, but they won't always think off-camera when you're not able to be there
with
the camera.
And the one caveat I'll give you about that is that if you don't do remotes and you're not prepared and you don't think about it, you'll end up screwing yourself up. Mm-hmm. I do it a lot. I don't do it every day, but I do it more than once a week. And I have for 25 years. And it's second nature to me. So I'm prepared. I'm thinking about it. But what'll happen is that I'll see photographers that'll try to do remotes and they're not familiar with it. And it screws them up because their head's going two different ways at once and they can't get it done.
And where is the best place for people to see some of your work?
Well, Sports Illustrated's a good spot. And I would say my website,
which is
BillFrakes.com.
Thank you, Bill, so much for spending some time. Yeah,
true pleasure.
And
I really enjoyed it.
I wish you well on tonight's big game.
Yeah, hope for no rain. Do an anti-rain dance. Thanks a lot. I look forward to hearing the whole series. I think it'll be fun.
The Inside Aperture podcast is produced by O'Reilly Media. To learn more about Aperture, be sure to visit digitalmedia.oreilly.com/aperture for articles, tutorials, blogs, and podcasts. This show is produced on a Mac using Soundtrack Pro. See you next time.